Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today, and it is a day that we certainly all know about and remember. I certainly do. And we'll begin by making a few comments about it. No need to identify what the day is, but we will in a moment. My guest today is Bruce Gagnon. Bruce is co-founder and coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And he's worked on space issues for over 20 years. Here's a quote that I used in a brief write-up about him. He says, "The U.S. intends to control and dominate space, militarily, of course, and deny other countries access." Well, it's a very gruesome thought, especially the way we want to use it, waging wars from space with horrible terror weapons able to strike anywhere with overwhelming force and cause vast devastation and amounts of killing, human misery. This is the plan of this government, and it doesn't matter which political party is in power. Bruce, I welcome you to the program.
Hey, Steve. Good to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on. It's such a big topic, and it never gets any attention in the media. I can't ever remember this being discussed. Absolutely never. Maybe something crops up every now and then, and I don't monitor it that closely. Frank, I can't stomach this stuff. I have to do it a little bit, Bruce, because I do some media critiques, but I certainly don't sit there all day focused on CNN or Fox or the rest of them. But before we begin, let's just mention a few things. Today is 9/11. We all remember, unless some listeners are too young to go back 9 years, but otherwise we all remember that fateful day. Bruce, I remember it just didn't seem right to me what was going on. But, you know, when it happened, it was too fresh. We didn't understand. When one plane hit a building, when one plane hits any building, well, you know, there have been instances of that happening in the past. Well, it's not the usual sort of event, but I guess it can happen. Two planes hitting two towers, standing side by side. Oh, I just immediately knew that something was fishy. Something was not right with this. And I wrote a letter to my brother later that day, and I said to him, "They'll be drinking champagne in the White House tonight." I had no idea that they were bringing out vintage stuff, because this gave them everything they wanted. And none of us, no matter how much we feared, had any idea what would be happening in the wake of that event. It's the seminal event of our times. And I'll throw one more comment in, Bruce, and then you jump in and add your thoughts. But there's no question in my mind, and others may disagree with me, but there's no question in my mind that the official 9/11 story was a bald-faced lie from A to Z. And one day, maybe there'll even be a smoking gun to prove it. We have virtually everything we need except the smoking gun. Bruce, you want to comment on that, and then we'll get into militarization of space?
Well, I agree with you absolutely about 9/11. The first thing I did after 9/11 happened was go to the World Atlas, look again at where Afghanistan was, because immediately, you know, everybody was, oh, we got to go hit Afghanistan. Because I've learned over the years, after having been in the military during the Vietnam War and reading the Pentagon Papers and seeing how the government essentially created pretexts in order to justify going in and, you know, expanding the war from just a few advisors at the time or in the early years in Vietnam. So I've learned over the years always to ask that question, why? What's, you know, what's really behind this? What's the underneath the layers here? And so what I learned was that Afghanistan sits in a very strategic part of the world. If you want to pipe Caspian Sea oil from the north to the Arabian Sea, where you can put it on ships and distribute it in that part of the world, you got to build pipelines through Pakistan and Afghanistan. So it's very clear to me that that's why we're there, ultimately, and the fact that it sits right on China's border, and it's just south of the former Soviet Union. It's a very militarily strategic outpost. And then I read Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. He was the one that, during the Carter administration, helped arm the Taliban to throw out the former Soviet Union that was, at that time, waging a war in Afghanistan. And in his book, The Grand Chessboard, Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about this very thing, this very need to control this part of the world for pipeline routes, and he had graphs and charts and everything else describing the whole situation. So for me, the whole 9/11 was a setup, a put-up, in order to carry out this larger mission. How does space fit into all this is, I think, important, because you remember the Project for New American Century that many Bush operatives belong to, including George W.'s brother Jeb, former governor of Florida. And in one of their documents some years back, they talked about needing a Pearl Harbor-like event in order to justify the massive developments for space technology and other U.S. offensive military systems. And so I think that coming out of 9/11, which was a seminal event for the military-industrial complex, I mean, everything that, you know, the doors were open to the American Treasury, the U.S. Treasury, after that event, and the weapons corporations, particularly the aerospace industry, was given massive welfare and access to our tax dollars so that they could then create the technologies to control and dominate the planet with space technology.
Indeed so, Bruce. They scare the public by events like this. And, of course, this was no ordinary event. It was really a horrendous event. Again, the seminal event of our time. I don't think any other moment in my life other than the first Pearl Harbor, and I was only 7 years old or so when that happened, so I was kind of young and didn't really have any idea what was going on. But since the first Pearl Harbor, 9/11 was the second Pearl Harbor, and indeed the Project for a New American Century. I've quoted it a number of times in articles that I've written, and the people involved in this project, going back to the late 1990s, Donald Rumsfeld, for one, Secretary of Defense under Bush, John Bolton, that extremist, the whole neocon parade.
Yeah.
And this was an excuse to milk the federal treasury for unlimited militarism and foreign wars, just like the housing bubble that burst and the economic mess that followed in the wake of it at the end of 2007 into 2008. That was the excuse to loot the treasury for the bankers on Wall Street.
Clearly these guys understood that fossil fuels are becoming a diminishing resource around the world, and that whoever controlled access and distribution of fossil fuels in this coming period would essentially hold the keys to the world's economic engine. So even though the American economy was no longer going to be able to compete with, for example, the Chinese economy, that if we could control the supplies of oil that, for example, China is very dependent on, then we would still control the world. And so the oligarchy in America made a very particular decision to create a military economy in America. It's no coincidence that today the number one industrial export of America is what?
Weapons.
And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line?
Oh, well, I have a degree in marketing, as a matter of fact, Bruce.
Well, there you go. You're just the man to ask.
My goodness, when you need to create a market, you need to create demand for the products to serve that market, products and services.
That's right.
Not just the weapons, but the technology and all of the operatives providing the services. I mean, many, many thousands of people, experts or people with know-how in all of the things military-related, and even in forces like the Blackwaters of the world, these mercenaries that show up all over the world to literally raise hell.
Well, just today, to my email list, I sent around an email called India U.S. to link huge military deal. And Obama is going to India in November to secure a $5 billion arms sales to India, which the United States is using to drag India into the Star Wars program, into the Space Weapons Technology program, going to make them our junior partner in that region, and also arming India not only, of course, to sell stuff, but also to create one more base, if you will, outpost in the current plan to militarily surround China, because India borders with China. And so this is what the program is today. During the Bush administration, the Pentagon came out with a statement saying that under corporate globalization of the world economy, every different country is going to have a different role. They said, we're not going to make stuff in America anymore. We're not going to have industrial jobs anymore because it's cheaper to move those jobs overseas where the corporations can maximize profits. And we've been seeing that for the last 20 years, where millions of jobs have left this country because of the corporate greed. And so the Pentagon is saying that our role under corporate globalization will be what they call security export, which to me means endless war to benefit the multinational corporations as they try to go and extract resources and labor, cheap labor around the world. And so this is what they have set up for us. This is our future. Be all you can be, join the army, because there isn't going to be anything else for you in small town working class America except flipping burgers at McDonald's.
That's exactly right, Bruce. And I wrote just recently on both of what you just said earlier in the week. I wrote an article on the economy, and I had a big section in it on one of our major problems, which is exporting jobs, high-paid manufacturing and other jobs, all kinds of jobs, any job in this country that can be done as easily anywhere in the world cheaper is leaving this country and being sent there, leaving God only knows what here. As you just said, you can get a low-paying service job at places like McDonald's or Walmart's, or you can join the military and get your head shot off. And if you join the military, unless you go in the Air Force, I guess, and you're up in the air someplace, you might be safer there. But if you're on the ground, maybe the Navy too, but if you're on the ground, you're going to end up in Iraq or Afghanistan, and there's a good chance you'll either get your head blown off or you will have a very serious emotional problem, because many, many thousands, not reported in our media, come back with PTSD and all sorts of emotional problems. And our military is so wonderful to our returning vets that they stiff arm them, and they do bare bones stuff, treating and helping the people most in need. And these are the people we put in harm's way, supposedly to bring democracy. Of course, the last thing in the world we'll ever tolerate is real democracy. We want exactly the opposite of democracy. And as far as, we come and we conquer and we occupy, we don't leave. Whenever we say, Obama, that is, or the Pentagon or whoever, says that we will have our troops out by the end of such and such, he and they are lying. And my example is, think South Korea. My goodness. Well, I guess the war officially never ended, but the armistice back 1953 or so. There's no war. North Korea doesn't threaten anyone. They will certainly defend themselves, but they threaten no one. another unreported story, Bruce, for at least the last 20 or more years, maybe 30 years, the North Koreans have tried to normalize relations with us, and we spurn them at every opportunity because we need them as an enemy, just like we needed the Taliban as an enemy, and we needed Osama as an enemy. Osama died at the end of 2001. We needed Saddam as an enemy. It goes on and on, Bruce. And one more thing, too, and then you jump back in. Just recently in the headlines, Joint Chief of Staff Mullen, what's his first name, Bruce Mullen?
No, I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, Mullen, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, came out and said, the biggest problem this country faces is our huge debt. We have to read the line in between the lines to know what he really is saying. He's saying, oh, we can't let up spending for militarism and weapons and foreign wars. That has to go on unending. And every time we ask for more, we need it and we have to get it. But what we need to do is to cut social benefits. So get rid of all those useless things like Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. We don't need those things. They don't defend the country. Only weapons in space, et cetera, and so on do that job.
Some years ago, in the one of the industry publications that I subscribe to called Space News, they ran an editorial trying to justify the massive expense of the Mars missions. And I remember the title of the editorial very well. It said, Mars missions are affordable. And it went on to say, we in the aerospace industry, we understand we have an obligation to come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for all of these space missions that we're doing. And we have. And we're sending our lobbyists to Washington now to secure it. And they went on to say that it's the entitlement programs. Well, officially, the entitlement programs in America are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of the welfare program after Bill Clinton got finished with it. These are the programs that the aerospace industry has identified for closing down, for shutting down, massively cutting, getting rid of, so that they can move that money into this plan for endless war and space technology.
Bruce, one aside also, I think it might have been around last March, I wrote an article with the title, America's Permanent War Agenda, exactly what you're saying. And one of the most amazing, I think the single most amazing statistic I ever found, and I have a book that documents it all, that since this nation was founded in 1776, we have not had one single year of peace. We've either been at war at home or away or both, directly or by proxies, but there never has been one single year that we could say we were not involved in any way whatsoever with a war. Now, if that isn't an indictment for the kind of system we really are, not the one we profess to be, that one really highlights it.
Yeah, well, it speaks well to the fact that we are a killing culture, and as you say, we have been from the very first days when we began to commit genocide against the native people in this country, and we've been at it ever since. The fact that today in America, you have to build weapons for endless war in order to create jobs, to provide food to put on people's table, really is a statement about the soul of our nation, that we have to be a killing culture in order to take care of our families. That really tells you something about our people and what we've become. Now, most Americans don't want to talk about that. They don't want to recognize that. They don't want to face that when they look in the mirror. But that is exactly what we've become. And that's why I think the transformative vision for the progressive community has to be the conversion of the military-industrial complex, that we, in the peace movement, in the environmental movement, in the labor movement, in the social justice movement, have to come forward with a unified vision that helps solve for all the myriad of problems that we have, from everything from unemployment to climate change to this killing culture soul that we have today. All of that begins to be solved by the conversion of the military-industrial complex, moving towards building rail systems to get us out of our cars, moving towards building a solar society, putting literally a solar device on every building in the country. Even where I live in Maine, solar works. So imagine the jobs created in research and development and manufacturing and installation and repair of a solar society. But where's that money going to come from when you have all these corporations moving their jobs overseas, moving their investment funds overseas? There is not going to be any job creation. There will not be any economic recovery in America until we convert the military-industrial complex. But sadly, movements like the environmental movement, while they're calling for solar, while they're calling for rail, while they're calling for wind, they won't touch the military spending issue for fear of being labeled anti-American or whatever. And until this changes, until all of the progressive community talks about the conversion of the military-industrial complex, I believe nothing significant really changes in America.
I agree with you, Bruce, and I would say along with that, you mentioned energy being such an important, powerful force in the country. I think of there are so many powerful forces, and really you could say the most powerful one is the media, because that's the way the message gets delivered to people. So depending on the message they get, and they hear it over and over again, this is how their minds are manipulated to believe stuff that may be the opposite of what's in their best interest. So the media certainly is a very powerful interest, but the energy sector of the economy, the money sector of the economy, mainly the big banks and big financial companies, giant insurers, people like that, and the other biggie for me is, and again, there are so many big ones. The other big one for me is agribusiness, because people have to eat, otherwise we'll starve in very short order. So these powerful giant corporations, near monopolies, oligopolies, but you could almost call them monopolies, because they're interlinked. Their boards are interlinked. They sit on each other's boards, so they influence each other's policies, and they're all working together destructively for the same aims: to suck as much wealth out, to get as big as they possibly can, to harm as many people, to make as much money as possible. And I agree with people like Chalmers Johnson, who sees this pattern and says, we are destroying ourselves. Mm-hmm. He uses the term overstretch. And, I mean, we will go the way of all the other empires. They all went the same way. None of them survived. They went too far, and they paid the price. And I think we've gone further. Nobody ever has the global reach that we do. And doing the outlandish things that we do, just 1,000 or more bases we have on countries all over the world. I mean, we literally send our people any way we want. A report that I quoted, U.S. Special Forces are deployed in at least 75 countries around the world, and I think in many cases covertly. They are in there uninvited. And why are they there? They're in there to kill, to rout out enemies of America who happen to believe in a different ideology than we do, like maybe a social world instead of a militaristic world. Well, they're enemies of the state. They're terrorists. So send special forces in and kill them. Well, my God. I mean, maybe they'll come for me one day. Maybe one day for you, Bruce, because we don't believe in what they believe in. We believe in a different kind of world that's sustaining. What they believe in is not sustaining.
Well, and in addition now to these 1,000 bases around the world, they're wanting to create an interplanetary military that would control the pathway on and off the planet Earth, because what they've discovered, you know, they say that in order to meet the demands for resources of this population we have on this Earth, we would need 6 other planets. So they're out there now trying to secure the pathway to these planets so they can mine them for resources in the coming years. There's helium-3 on the moon. There's, they say, magnesium and cobalt and uranium on Mars. In fact, the Halliburton Corporation is already working on a drilling mechanism for mining on Mars. And so the Pentagon plan today, the Star Wars plan, is to essentially create a parallel military highway between the Earth and the planetary bodies that they will be able to control. And they will decide which corporations can go off and mine the sky in the future when it becomes cost-effective to do so. And through NASA, the taxpayers are now paying for the research and development of all the technologies to make this possible. And NASA has already said that when the day comes, that when they can begin to cost-effectively mine the sky, they want to privatize all the operations. In fact, Obama, his first decision in terms of space with NASA was to begin privatizing NASA soon after he came into office. So this is what we're seeing today. I just want to mention our website if people want more information about the things I'm talking about related to space and military policy. You can go to our website, which is spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org. I also have a popular blog called Organizing Notes, where I write just virtually every day about the work I'm doing. A lot of people like to follow that. It's called Organizing Notes. You can just Google it along with my name, or also go to our website, spaceforpeace.org. And you'll find a link to the blog.
And Bruce, I would say also, the way people can find my blog is to just Google Steve Lenman blog. And I think if listeners just Google Bruce Gagnon, they'll find your sites. I believe that's the way I found them in the first place. I just Google your name, your last name, G-A-G-N-O-N. Google that name, and you'll find these sites. Some of them people don't remember, or they don't write them down. But this is the kind of information that you put out, Bruce, that we need to know. And I would say on any topic, well, any major topic, even if it's addressed through the major media, it comes through a distorted lens, a managed lens, and you have no idea what the real important facts are. But it just happens that the idea of working space, whether militarizing it or mining other planets, there's nothing in the media about this stuff. I guess if they're going to mine them, Bruce, they would do it robotically. Wouldn't that be the way to do it?
Well, you know, they're certainly working on that, but they also will always have a need for humans to be involved, and that's why they're developing the nuclear-powered rocket with nuclear reactors for engines, so that they can cut in half the amount of time it takes to get to Mars, because presently it takes about a year for a spaceship to get to Mars, and they say because of solar radiation, an astronaut's body would turn to jello. So they want to cut that time in half, and that's why they're making the nuclear rocket, something we're very much against, as you can imagine, because the whole nuclear development process at the Department of Energy laboratories around the country has been problematic for years. Contamination of workers, contamination of water supplies, etc. And then the possibility of a launch accident releasing deadly plutonium is more than we can handle. And in fact, there have been accidents already with space nuclear power over the years. So this is something we're all concerned about. I'd like to say something about the contemporary issue, though, that we're working on. It's called missile defense, being sold to the American people in the world as a good plan to protect us from attack by the rogue states, when in fact U.S. missile defense deployments that are now actually speeding up under the Obama administration, they're now being used to encircle Russia and China to give the United States a first-strike capability. Let me explain how they would work. At the U.S. Space Command, they've been wargaming a first-strike attack on China for some years. They do it every year. They call it the Red Team versus the Blue Team. Set in the year 2016, the United States launches a first-strike attack, and the weapon that is used against China in that first strike, the first weapon that is used, is the successor to the shuttle, what they're calling the military space plane. that would fly through space to the other side of the planet in less than an hour, drop a devastating attack on China, on their nuclear forces. China today has 20 nuclear missiles that are capable of hitting the west coast of the United States. And so in this first strike, the U.S. tries to take out those 20 nuclear missiles. But inevitably, they don't get them all. And so China, in the computer war game at the Space Command, China fires a retaliatory strike. And that is the job of the missile defense system at that point, to take out those remaining retaliatory capabilities. And so that's why today, again, the U.S. And under the Obama administration is surrounding Russia and China with these missile defense systems. In the case of Russia, they're now being put into Poland, Romania, and Bulgaria, and will likely be going into other countries on or near the Russian border. And as it turns out, Russia has the world's largest supply of natural gas. In the case of China, missile defense systems are being put in Japan and South Korea, and on Navy Aegis destroyer ships that are actually made in the town where I live here in Bath, Maine. And these ships are being outfitted with these missile defense systems, and so they'll be parked just off the shore of China. In fact, recently Obama approved a sale of missile defense systems to Taiwan, so we're bringing them just right offshore of mainland China, sort of a reverse of the Cuban Missile Crisis. At the same time, NATO is expanding as part of this encirclement of both Russia and China. And so a lot of people now today are talking about the New START treaty with Russia that Obama negotiated, saying that we're going to reduce our nuclear weapons. But Russia is so alarmed about these Obama missile defense deployments that they're now saying, wait a minute, if you go forward with these missile defense deployments surrounding Russia, we're going to have to take a second look at this START treaty, because why would we want to reduce our nuclear missiles when you're trying to create a first strike capability that would take out our nuclear retaliatory capability? We can't afford to reduce our nukes at the time when you're beginning this encirclement of us.
Oh, a big topic, Bruce. Hold that thought, and let's pick it up when we come back. A short break at the bottom of the hour. I wrote a little bit about that, too, Obama's national defense strategy, the latest version. I wrote about it some months back. But let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of NaturalNews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site ConsumerWellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Loyal PRN listeners, do you have any broadcast industry experience? You listen to the Progressive Radio Network, you call into the Progressive Radio Network, and now you can even host your own show on the Progressive Radio Network. PRN is looking for talented, vibrant hosts for a plethora of new shows on various topics such as college life, Caribbean music, cooking, technology, senior citizen lifestyles, classical music, different cultures of the world, and conspiracy theories. If you have experience hosting programming in radio or television, and you have a progressive point of view, we have the perfect forum for you to have your voice be heard and air your progressive thoughts. talks. Call 646-307-4482 or send us an email at carolee@garynoel.com. carolee@garynoel.com. The Progressive Radio Network, the number one forum for progressive minds.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Bruce Gagnon, talking about the implications of the gross militarization going on, the power of the Pentagon, the draining of the treasury with the outlandish military spending, the militarizing of space. Bruce, let's pick up with what we're doing to the former Soviet Union, Russia, surrounding them, and they do indeed know it, and even the so-called New START treaty. Oh, it really, it certainly did not impress me. What they're really doing, I know what our country's plan is, and I'm certain that Russia will match us. They will get rid of a lot of old weapons and end up replacing them with better and stronger and maybe more powerful new ones. So I used a phrase in my article, I do remember, going back some months, talking about this treaty and the whole concept going on is old wine in new bottles. And that's the way we operate. You know, we'll promise people anything and then we do anything we damn please.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a FBI agent because I wanted to fight organized crime. And so I took a correspondence course. I thought I'd get jump on it and so I learned about fingerprinting, and I learned about, police language. And one of the words I remember, phrases I remember, was modus operandi. Every criminal has a method of operation. They tend to repeat their way of operating. And I use that now to describe this criminal syndicate that runs our country today, this corporate oligarchy. That it's not just our country, but they literally run the world. And they have an MO. They have a modus operandi, a method of operation. And the way they work is to appear to be the good guy, create a facade, appear to be the righteous one. Obama saying, oh, yeah, I want to get rid of nuclear weapons. He went to Prague. He made a big speech. Everybody's cheering. You know, it's a shell game, you know. I've learned to call Obama the magician. Watch both his hands, I say, very closely, because I already see his MO, the way he works. He makes a speech about, oh, yeah, we want to get rid of nuclear weapons and, you know, in my lifetime and, and all that kind of stuff. Great rhetoric. But then the next day, with his other hand, he's then giving the permission to go ahead and deploy missile defense systems to surround Russia and China. He's inking deals with India to, sell them more weapons. When he was in the Senate, before he ran for president, he voted for the U.S.-India nuclear deal that is helping India build more nuclear power plants and more nuclear weapons. At a time when he's saying we've got to get rid of nuclear weapons, he's helping to proliferate them in one of the most dangerous regions of the world. So, you know, I've learned that it's all facade with these guys, whether it's Republican or Democrat. I remember when Jimmy Carter was president. I was just getting out of the Air Force when he was running, and I remember I was very taken by one of his phrases. The arms race is a disgrace to the human race, Jimmy Carter said. And I was very moved by that, and I went to work on his campaign. At that time, I was living in Florida. And What I learned is by the end of his one administration, he had built the largest submarine base in the Atlantic in St. Mary's, Georgia, a tiny little fishing town in southern Georgia, right on the Georgia-Florida border, for the Trident nuclear submarine. It was total crap, total lie. His arms race is a disgrace to the human race. He was just like all the rest, and that's what one of the factors that really led me to become disillusioned with the Democrats, to begin to see that both parties were part of this military-industrial machine.
Absolutely right, Bruce. And of course, I do remember this. I've written a little bit on Carter from time to time, not too much, but one of the things I remember that I don't even think I wrote about was he was in the Navy. He was in the nuclear Navy, and his commander in chief was Hyman Rickover, I guess the military godfather of America's nuclear Navy. So, I mean, that's where he was weaned, and that's what he believed. And, of course, when they become president, Bruce, they pretty much follow the party line. They can deviate a little bit, but if they go too far, watch out. You are very vulnerable. They'll take you out as easily as take anyone out, and we certainly have examples to prove it.
Well, you know, one of my biggest criticisms of the peace movement today, and this is a general statement. Of course, it doesn't apply to everyone. It doesn't apply to you and many other of my friends in the peace movement across the country that are good, solid, tireless workers. But by and large, there's a lot of people out there who claim to be or see themselves as peace activists. But in the end, they're more committed to the Democratic Party than they are to actual working on peace issues. So we see today many people that called themselves peace activists when George W. Bush was in power and his wars were evil, but then when Obama's president of the United States and he's expanding the war in Afghanistan, he's helping to encircle Russia and China, those people remain quiet because they want to remain loyal to the Democratic Party. They see their political work more and importantly connected to the Democrats than they do to the movements. And I think this is a serious, serious tactical, strategic error. And I think that we have to never allow our movements to become absorbed and controlled and demobilized. Obama has demobilized the peace movement at a time when we need more mobilization more than ever before.
Bruce, you're absolutely right. There is no difference. A little wiggle room around the edges. So it's not 100% no difference. But on the big issues, there is no difference between the two major parties. And they shut out any other opposition. If there are legitimate, solid, good people who want to run, they cannot run because the system excludes them. And always elections are also manipulated. That's another story altogether. But people foolishly believe that, my God, we finally got rid of George Bush, and now we have a guy in there we can really believe in. Well, Obama is George Bush's third term, and we need to understand that.
Yeah. Well, tell me, Steve, why is it Obama is truly the socialist and all this kind of stuff that we hear, why is it that the corporations, the weapons corporations, the military-industrial complex, gave Obama more campaign donations than they gave to John McCain?
Oh, well, absolutely. I wrote an awful lot about the race. I wrote about Obama's record in the Senate, a little bit about who he was before he got into politics in Chicago and back in law school. This guy was picked early on, and I think of him as a Manchurian candidate, except he knows what he is.
And he was picked by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who met Obama when Obama was a student at Columbia University. Brzezinski was teaching there. They were looking ahead at demographics in America. They're recognizing that 30, 40 years ahead, blacks and Hispanics are going to be the majority population in America. The oligarchy needs to start coming up with people of color who still are under the control of the oligarchy. And Obama was chosen then, groomed by them, and made to be president. Whenever in the history of America has someone gone from the state Senate to the U.S. Senate for only 2 years and then becomes president of the United States with no base of support across the country to speak of?
Oh, absolutely. And they brought him out. They brought him out at the perfect time. The country was fed up with George Bush. He left office with some of the lowest approval ratings ever. But the approval rating fluctuated a little bit. But basically, he was rock bottom, as bad as any other past president. And surprisingly, Harry Truman was the one who had the lowest ratings because of the Korean War. Harry Truman was no saint either, not by a long shot. But we finally got rid of Bush, and it was the perfect time to have our first black president, a guy who could put a full sentence together after a president who spoke like he had marbles in his mouth, who only got through two top schools because of his last name and who his daddy was. And Obama, well, you know, who knew anything about Obama? But you're right, he was picked early on, picked by important people, Brzezinski, and I think others spotted him, followed him all the way through law school, and he was groomed for the moment when they would unveil him. And then against him in the race, I wrote about the race, the McCain-Palin ticket. This was a ticket picked to lose. McCain literally hated in the Republican Party, among other reasons, because he has a very nasty temper, and he uses it against other Republicans privately in the cloakroom.
And the people in Chicago probably know the Crown family, one of the wealthiest families around. They early on were big Obama promoters, helped open up the doors to the Jewish community across the country for Obama in terms of support and particularly in terms of fundraising. Well, maybe people don't know, though, that the Crown family has historically been a major controlling stockholders in the General Dynamics Corporation. So Obama, from the outset, was indebted to the military-industrial complex. And so all the stuff we heard was pure rhetoric. There's no doubt that he's a bright man, that he's an articulate man, which makes it to me even more incredibly sad and outrageous that he said the things he did in the campaign and now has completely betrayed the people that voted for him, who really did, in fact, vote for someone that they thought was going to be a peace candidate and has now turned into be one more of the same in terms of an operative for the military-industrial complex.
What bothers me the most, Bruce, is after all these months, nearly a year and two-thirds, so many people still believe in the guy when his record is absolutely outrageous down the line. I mean, he has literally stiff-armed the people who elected him. He's done everything for business and the military-industrial complex and the bankers. He's looted the federal treasury. He has a worse permanent war agenda than George Bush. I mean, he's got forces in Yemen. He's attacking Pakistan. God only knows what he might do next.
And why are people giving him this pass that they wouldn't have given to Bush?
They shouldn't.
For doing the same thing. But why are people giving Obama that pass?
Well, there is a media echo, except on Fox News, that I think is pretty supportive of Obama, and it's outrageous. You get people like a couple of folks who I really dislike immensely on MSNBC, and I'm talking specifically about Bruce Olbermann and Rachel Maddow, and I believe they both came down hard on George Bush and his people, and they support Barack Obama and his people, and there's not a dime's worth of difference between them as far as the big policies go. Bush.
But I think people know that. I think so-called progressives, liberals, some are probably listening to your show right now, who know better, but continue to support Obama. And I think my opinion is that generally the reason is because they want to live in a state of denial, and they don't really want to have to do the big work. They don't really want to have to take on the fact that we're living in an oligarchy and we're under control, and that neither party is going to bail us out, that we live under a war system, we live in a killing culture. People don't want to face that because they don't want to really have to throw in and do what needs to be done to create a real, literal revolution of values, as Martin Luther King called it, in this country. They don't want to do the work. And so they want to take the easy way out. They want the magic bullet, the golden pass, and they hope upon hope that some politician will bail them out. And even though deep down inside they know it's a lie, they know it's an illusion, but they just don't want to because they fear they'll lose their job. They fear that on their street neighbors will think they're radicals. The social pressures, I think, the illusion of success still remains a controlling psychological mechanism of even progressives in this country today.
It really is a shocking shame, Bruce, and I say over and over again on this program, regular listeners have heard this line a number of times, that, you know, everything going on is touching our lives. It's affecting us. It's harming us. We might want to just kind of let it slide and not do anything, as you say, but if we let this go long enough, then, you know, other people have been hurt. And the moment of truth is coming when we will be hurt as well. And unless we do, my punchline is, a change will never come from the top down. If we're waiting for politicians to make progressive changes, we're waiting for Godot. It absolutely will never happen. It has never happened. It never will happen. And the only way change, important change ever comes, important change, is when we do it from the grassroots,
yep.
And we can do it if we want to. There have been moments when some things have been done. My God, in 1965, we got Medicare. During the Depression, we got Social Security. We got some good things. They never were as good as they should have been, but there's certainly things that we would never have a prayer of getting today. I mean, we didn't have the federal debt that we have today. Even in the Great Depression, we didn't have the onus of this debt that they keep raising exponentially. Deliberately they're raising it. They're raising it so literally they're starving the mechanism to make America, dare I say America again, because it never really was that way, but it certainly was a different country that I grew up in, as imperfect as it was, and boy was it ever. But that country compared to today is night and day. My God, we had great benefits. Inflation hadn't crushed the dollar to maybe at best 10% of what it was half a century ago. It didn't have to be this way. They made it happen to be this way, to suck our wealth from us, to give our wealth to the top 1% in the country.
That's what I call 21st century feudalism.
We're heading for feudal America.
Except this time we get a color TV and a car, and we're massively in indentured servitude through our credit cards to these very corporations that are bleeding us dry and destroying the planet and destroying our children and grandchildren's future. So this is the choice that we're given today, and it's just absolutely unbelievable to me that so many people are on their knees, afraid to rattle their chains. Well, we don't have much time, and the call has to be, get off your knees, stand on your feet, rattle your chains, liberate yourself, liberate your mind, end this mental decolonization of both the Republican and Democratic parties, end this mental decolonization of this capitalist system that is destroying the planet out of sheer greed. And the only way that we, the people, can really have the chance of building a new society is by converting the military-industrial complex, converting it to sustainable technology development, taking care of the planet, weatherizing our homes, saving on energy, cleaning up the planet. Instead of flying to Mars and talking about terraforming Mars, trying to create a green planet out of that red, dusty, dry planet, clean up this planet here on this Earth where we all still have a chance to live.
Bruce, I agree with you 100%. I'll put it in blunt terms. We have a simple choice, and who knows when the day of reckoning will finally arrive. It will not warn us in advance. It will creep up on us, and when it's finally here, full force.
Well, it's here now, Steve.
It's here, but it keeps getting worse, and there'll be a moment when this country is no different than the banana republics we read about in history books, from Soviet Russia under Joseph Stalin, from the worst of Nazism. That's what's coming to America. We have a choice. It's very simple. We can, as you say, we can either get off our ass and do something to work for our own welfare, our own survival, or we can cut our own throats. There's nothing in between.
You know, I just think it's arrogant on the part of humans in this moment to, I hear people all the time, progressive people, say, oh, well, we're all going to die anyway. What the hell, you know, why bother? I think it's arrogant for us to think that we have a right in this generation to just end it all, just let it go, let life go, because we're too lazy or we're too sucked into the success mythology to fight. You know, I feel like I have a indebtedness to those that those generations that brought me here from the ice ages on, and I have a responsibility to the future generations to stay engaged in life, and I think all of us have that obligation as human beings. There's nothing more important being a human being than to fight and protect the future generations. Others have done that for us, and we have the same responsibility to do that for those that come after us. Again, I want to alert people to our website at the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. That website is spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org, and also my blog that is kind of a daily diary, if you will, of my organizing. It's called Organizing Notes, and just Google it along with my name. You should be able to find it.
Oh, absolutely, Bruce. And if they forget all that, just by Googling Bruce Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N, they'll find it. I'll say one thing. I'm one person among so many who really do something. And I literally became obsessed to get involved in this. I'm 76 years old. I'm retired. I could live a quiet, peaceful life, just kind of living out my senior years. And I decided I want none of it. Some people would say I live a very dull life. I literally spend virtually all my time, except, you know, the essentials, shopping and the necessary appointments, whether it's a doctor, whether it's somebody else. But I basically spend all my time writing, doing media work. I get asked to do an awful lot of interviews. I had three of them this past week. I already have three scheduled for next week. I don't say no. This is important, and I feel it's vital to spread important information on these crucial things that literally, it's almost a matter of life. It is a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
I mean, we either want a good life or a living death. Do we want it? Do we want... you know the old saying, Bruce. I mean, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees.
Exactly. You know, maybe everyone can't spend the amount of time that you or I do.
Oh,
for
I'm
example.
Retired, Bruce. I've got
but
the time.
But at the same time, every person can do one thing every day, one thing to try to take this system down, to try to make a positive change for the future. And I think that everyone has to really challenge themselves day in and day out to find some way to do something, whether it's making a call or writing a letter to the editor or making a donation or joining a vigil on a corner or doing whatever can be done, speaking up at the break room at work when others are remaining quiet for fear that they might be classified as being out of the box. You know, there's all kinds of things that people can do, and we all need to do more of it. We need to really challenge ourselves each and every day.
Bruce, absolutely. It's so simple. Everybody can do something. It doesn't matter what it is. And no matter how busy you are, if you get sick, you find time to go to the doctor. If you need the surgery, you make the time to get it and to recuperate. If your future is sick, you need to find the time to do something to change that. Otherwise, it won't change. And we need a lot of people thinking this way. You know, I mean, it's our futures. It's our choice. What do we want, and what are we willing to do to get it? It won't be handed to us. We have to go out and work for it. Bruce, we're just about out of time. They'll be cutting away shortly. This was a terrific hour. I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, so, anytime. Thanks for having me on, Steve, and good luck to you and all your listeners. Everybody, the best of luck in the years ahead. We're in for a tough one here. We need each other. and we need to stick together.
We sure do, and on this 9/11 day, think how we were conned and all the harm that was done because of this very day 9 years ago. Are we going to let them get away with it, or are we going to do something about it? Because they're going to keep conning us and hurting us until they kill us. We can't put up with that. Bruce, many, many thanks. Join us again tomorrow, same time. We'll talk about, the economy, financial issues. Ellen Brown will be on. You know Ellen. She does some of the best financial writing I know. Join us then.